Welcome to the Productivity Show by Asian Efficiency, helping you do more, be better. And now here's your host, Zachary Sexton.
You are tuned into the Productivity Show by Asian Efficiency. My name is Zachary Sexton, and today I have with me Mr. Joshua Becker. Welcome, Joshua.
Well, hello. How are you?
I am very well. It's good to catch up. We first connected a couple months ago in Austin, Texas, when you were giving a fantastic talk at the Think Better, Live Better event. And I knew I had to have you on, so I connected with you afterwards. And we had a chat, and you said, hey, I would love to come on because I've got a book coming out in a couple months, and it will be actually released at the time this episode is released. It's called The More of Less, Finding the Life You Want Underneath Everything You Own. And I really like that thought of just having piles of clothes, and then all of a sudden, oh man, the life I always wanted was underneath there. And for those who don't know you, Becoming Minimalist is the name of your popular blog. A million people go there a month. You also have other best-selling books. One of them is Simplify and Clutter-Free with Kids. And I will have to read that sometime in the future when I have kids. So that's kind of a brief intro. Is there anything else that I missed that you want to talk about that you'd like people to know about you before I start asking you questions on this whole minimalism thing?
No, I think it's fantastic. I appreciate the invitation, and I don't like to turn down any invitation where I get to show up and talk about myself. So thank you so much.
One of the things that I'm learning about Joshua is his dry sense of humor. It comes over better in person. So I wanted you to start with a bit of a story. Can you tell us about that Memorial Day weekend in 2008 that started your journey to minimalism?
Yeah, such a crazy story how there are certain, every so often there's just a moment in life that changes everything. And sometimes it can be changes things for the worse. But for me, it was just a moment in time that changed everything for the better. It was a Saturday morning. I was living in Vermont. I was cleaning out my garage, which, right, this is what we do on the weekends. We clean our house and run some errands and do some shopping. And I was cleaning out my garage while my five-year-old son was alone in the backyard. He kept running up about every 20, 30 minutes, asking me to come play, come push him on the swing, play catch, whatever. And I just kept pushing him off, right? Can't right now. I got to finish what I'm doing. I can't right now. As soon as I'm done, I'm almost done. My garage project ends up taking hours with him running back and forth several times. My neighbor's outside and is noticing this interaction. And at one moment, we walk past each other. And she, I think, noticing the frustration on my shoulders of how long this garage project was taking, she said, boy, isn't it great owning a home? And I said, well, you know what they say, the more stuff you own, the more your stuff owns you. And she responded with this life-changing sentence. She said, you know, that's why my daughter is a minimalist. She keeps telling me I don't need to own all this stuff. And I remember looking at the pile of things piled up in my driveway, knowing full well that my possessions weren't making me happy. But then out of the corner of my eye, I see my son alone in the backyard and suddenly had this realization that not only was everything I owned not making me happy, everything I owned was taking me away from the very thing that did bring me happiness and purpose and fulfillment in life. So that began our journey to get rid of the things that we don't need so we can focus on the things that actually matter.
All right. And that is pretty much your definition of minimalism. Is there anything that you would want to tweak or help people understand that idea? Because I think that word comes with a lot of, gosh, I don't know what to call it, but it's one of those hot words where some people really love it, some people really hate it, some people feel like, well, I'm going to just live in this house with no pictures on the wall and no furniture like Steve Jobs, or other people think of it. I don't know. I want to hear your definition of minimalism.
You know, I think at first it sounds rigid, or it sounds unattractive. It sounds boring, I think, to some people. Mm-hmm. When I first started pursuing minimalism, I found some people online who were who are living minimalist lives, and they were all doing it differently. Some were using it to travel the world. Others were living a minimalist life so they could get out of mortgage debt and student loan debt so they could have some freedom. Other people were living it with a family, with six kids, with two kids, all different places on the continent, on the world, and around the world, actually. And they were all singing the praises of this lifestyle of owning just the stuff they need, but they were all doing it differently. And what I discovered was they were all living a minimalist life based on what their values were. If they just wanted to get out of debt, they made certain decisions about what they kept. If they wanted to travel the world, they made decisions on what they were going to keep. If they were going to live in a neighborhood with their kids, they were making decisions on just what they were going to keep. And so minimalism is actually very flexible, and it's going to look different for every person because we all have different values. We all have different things that we want to accomplish in life. And so when I define minimalism, I define it as the intentional promotion of the things we most value and the removal of anything that distracts us from it. That is what minimalism looks like to me.
Oh, I really like that. You've got some good, and that's when you were giving your talk, there's one-liners like that. And there's a quote that I hope to somehow stuff into this conversation that was just, oh, drop the mic. It really makes you think about it. So it's minimalism to you is more about intentional living. And one of the things that isn't necessarily as intentional is organizing your stuff. You kind of feel like home organization might be a band-aid to an underlying solution. And you had some statistics in your book that were just crazy to me. One of them was an average home has 300,000 items in it. And the other is that the home organization industry, so all the containers and the home organization coaches and basically Office Max and the file folders there, is an $8 billion business. So it's like selling you more stuff to organize your stuff. How do people get to that deeper problem of not rearranging their stuff, but maybe rearranging and their life and having a little bit more intention with that?
Yeah, I think Courtney Carver says it best. She says, "Don't you think if organizing your stuff worked, you'd be finished by now?" Right? Organizing is always only just a temporary solution. We organize our stuff today, but we always have to reorganize it again tomorrow. On the other hand, minimalism is an act of permanence in that it removes the item that you don't need completely and entirely from your life. And what happens then, minimalism is much more about addition than it is subtraction, right? It's not so much the things that we remove from our lives. Joy is in what we're able to add into our lives because of it. Most people have no idea how much time and energy and effort and money goes into maintaining the things that they own. And that doesn't even begin to account for all the time and energy and effort that we spend pursuing more and more and more things. So minimalism totally reshapes that, and it changes that. And it forces you to, I think, dig deeper into your heart and say, okay, if possessions aren't making me happy, and they're actually more of a burden than a happiness generator, then how about I get rid of those so that I can start pursuing happiness and fulfillment and purpose in a place that I might actually find it in? And that's something that organizing your stuff just can't ever accomplish. It can't ever force that self-realization, that self-awareness minimalism brings to us, not to mention even the opportunity to go pursue wherever we want to pursue happiness instead.
What would you say to the people out there who's like, I like getting the latest tech things, or I like buying new clothes. I get value from that. How do you usually address that I'm guessing common statement?
Yeah. You know, one of the I discovered many life-changing benefits of owning less, and one that caught me off guard at the beginning was that minimalism actually allows me to own higher quality things. So I think a lot of people confuse minimalism and frugality, and there is some, I think there's some overlap between the two. But becoming minimalist doesn't mean that you're not going to own. It doesn't mean that you can't own nice clothes. It doesn't mean that you can't own better technology. Instead, it allows you, right? It means you're going to stop spending money on stuff you don't need so that you can invest more into those things that do bring you joy in life, that do bring you happiness. So that would be my answer to that. Especially tech that, you know, the tech rat race can become, you know, as consuming as anything, where we just constantly need the newest and the greatest. And whatever company tells us, that they're coming out with something new, we need to own, you know, we like sheep want to go and buy it. And so, so tech, I think can be, look, does it solve problems or not? If your technology isn't solving problems for you, then it's only adding problems into your life.
Awesome. All right. I like that. And this is strange for me. It's not part of your book, but it hit me in a similar way, the way you're talking about it and the way that you describe minimalism and getting rid of clutter in your life. I'm starting a budget. The Dojo, our online community, encouraged me to start up this program called YNAB again. So it's called You Need a Budget. And I noticed that a lot of people may have the opinion that having a budget is about pinching the pennies or not spending as much money. But no, it's more about intentionally deciding where my money is going to go. For example, my girlfriend and I really like hosting parties. So we have a party planning committee and we value growth. So we've put a lot of money into our personal growth account. And it was really fun creating those different buckets and realizing, all right, well, right now we may be spending a little bit more on going out to eat and that we don't get as much joy from that. Or we may be spending a little bit more on clothes or groceries than we want. And we'd actually rather spend that on travel. So it is making me feel like this idea of minimalism and budgeting have that same bad rap, but are misunderstood for similar reasons, is that it's not limiting. It's just more about intentionality and prioritization and doing things that you actually really get value and joy from versus things that just, I don't know, you're going with the flow or you're getting pulled by a marketing message or you're just trying to keep up with the Joneses in different situations. So I like what I'm hearing here. And if other people are deciding, okay, I do like these benefits, whatever they happen to be, you know, you're not living in a mess. Maybe you get to travel more maybe it's environmental reasons is why you just want to consume less goods. How would you start? Let's start diving into the solution. What would you suggest when starting the decluttering process? And maybe tell us your story of how you started, or if that's not the way you would suggest because you went about it all wrong, maybe let us know where you would start if you could start over again.
You know, I think fortunately I got a few things right, or at least for me, we got right at the beginning. And so my encouragement to anybody who wants to get started, and I got to tell you, this is a message that really resonates with people. I mean, we have a million people that come to the blog, and I've spoken all over the world on this because people are drawn to the idea. Most people know that they own too much stuff. And so I think when someone comes along with an idea that you can find more life by owning less, they're drawn to it in a very heartfelt way. And what I always encourage people to do is I just say, start easy. Start in the easiest place possible that would be for you to remove some things. A lot of times we rush to our mind rushes to the hardest thing that we would have to get rid of. Oh, I could never get rid of my books. I could never get rid of my sentimental things. You mentioned, I could never get rid of my clothes. I could never get rid of my tech stuff. And so I would say, don't start there. You don't start with an obstacle, right? Start with an opportunity. And so the first thing that I decluttered was my car. I was cleaning out the garage. My car was parked over out on the street. As I pulled it in that evening, I just looked around my vehicle and there were all these things that didn't need to be there. There was maps and CDs and sunglasses and coins, receipts, pens and Happy Meal toys and ketchup packets, like all these things that just didn't need to be in my car. And I took them all out. I just put them in a bag. I didn't do anything with them at the time. The next morning when I got in my car, it felt so nice to not have any of the distraction around me. I felt like air could flow through my car. And it just felt like I could focus better on what I was doing. And from there, we went to the living room and we went to the bathroom and the bedroom. And we just started in easy places where we could notice the benefits of owning less. And then we eventually found motivation and momentum to get to those harder places later.
All right. So don't go to the attic right away because it's going to be hard and you're not going to notice it. You're not going to have those benefits like you did in the car, which is a small area that you spend a lot of time in, or a living room that's a communal area that you'll notice those benefits of sooner. That makes a lot of sense. Is there any other 80-20 that you do as regards to maybe how to prioritize a certain room or how to prioritize? We talked about a lot of things that could be clutter, possibly paper or books or clothes or kitchen utensils. Is there any easier battles that could be fought early on?
You know, those are good ones. The kitchen is an interesting place where the kitchen is kind of right in the middle, where the kitchen is not easy for a lot of people. There's a lot of gadgets and tools and things that we've collected that just take up space in the kitchen. They require a little bit of thought to go through, but it's a spot that reaps immediate benefits because once you can put everything away easier, and once your kitchen counters aren't cluttered like they were before, and everything has a space, and you remove duplicate items are always helpful, right? You don't need six spatulas. You'd probably be okay with one or two at the most. And so when you begin making those changes in the kitchen, I think you can notice it quickly. So that's an intermediate spot, I think, for a lot of people in a lot of homes.
And you suggest going room by room. You have a bit of a process for this. It's kind of a checklist system of piles that you create. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. You know, I don't think I'm, breaking too much new ground here. It was the process that we used. Almost every professional organizer will tell you to do the same thing. They'll tell you to physically touch every item in a room and then sort every item into one of three piles. This stays in the room. This pile gets relocated somewhere in the house, and then this pile is discarded, whether it's recycled or donated or sold, whatever it might be. And so you just create the three piles, and then you return everything that stays in the room, those things that need to be relocated or taken to a different spot, and then those things that need to be discarded, remove them quickly and do it right away. Otherwise, they just hang around and get in the way.
One hack that my sister uses is she has, I believe every month, but a place where you can donate either clothes or electronics or anything that you want to come automatically to pick up her stuff. So every month she's always making sure that she's getting a little something. So a way to automate that remove process could be finding some place like that in your town. And I'll find it and put it in the show notes. I'm not remembering the name of the organization. I feel like if you're in the U.S., they'll probably be that organization. Do you have any good removal strategies or services that you've found?
You know, I think they are important because stuff continues to accumulate. Like things continue to enter into our homes more, especially if you have kids, if you have a family, right? Stuff just continually coming into our homes. But very few of us have systems to remove them, right? Like maybe when we spring clean once a year, we get rid of something. But I think that monthly one is a fantastic one. We actually found a lot of motivation in just the garbage man that the both the garbage container and the recycling container that came every single week when we were living in Vermont, that I would use that as an opportunity to say, okay, what else, you know, not just what can I recycle or what needs to go in the garbage, but, you know, as I'm taking that stuff out, can I collect a box of things to drop off at Goodwill on my way to work as well?
How long did this whole process take for you from going from somebody with a full garage to, actually, maybe you can explain where you're at right now, because you still have a family, so it's not like you're living on less than 100 items, which is something that a goal some people go after. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so there was, I think, an endpoint and then kind of an ongoing process part. So it took us about 9 months to go through our home. Probably an initial stage of 3 to 4 months, and then like another stage of, okay, let's go through even, you know, with a finer tooth comb, and let's get rid of even more things. So 9 months, I say, it took us to go through our house. But that being said, about 3 or 4 years after finding minimalism, we moved into a smaller home just because we didn't need as much space. So we saved money by moving into a smaller home. And when we did that, we got rid of even more things just because we didn't have the space to hold them. So 9 months, and then even years later, we removed even more that we didn't need to take with us. And then, you know, with a growing family and a changing family, it's an ongoing process of evaluating what, you know, what needs to be here and what doesn't need to be here and what can we live without.
All right. And those first 3 months, what did those look like for you? Was it just every weekend shipping stuff off to Goodwill, going to the dump, or how did that first initial push look for your family?
Yeah, both of those. I, in my family, so it's me, my wife, and then we had two kids. They were 5 and 2 at the time. My wife was on board with owning less. She was on board with minimalism. But I was much more passionate about it. And so I was the one that was making most of the changes. There was a stretch, a time where I was waking up at 5 a.m. and I would do an hour of getting rid of stuff, especially when we were going through the basement, which was basically our attic at the time. And so there was a little stretch in there where I was carving out specific time to do this. And what I found was, you know, because a lot of people will say, gosh, I'm even too busy to declutter, to get rid of this stuff. And at the beginning, I carved out time in the evenings after the kids went to bed or getting up early before the rest of the family was up. But I quickly found that the more progress I made in decluttering, the more time I had available to me, because I was spending less time taking care of stuff, tidying up rooms every single evening. I had more space to do even more. It was like a snowball. It just kept growing and building and finding more and more energy to do it.
What got you so on fire to wake up at 5 a.m. or work late into the evening to get your home to a place where you want it to be? Because, yeah, okay, it takes less time to tidy up, but you really have to have some deep motivation in order to consistently for that period of time and then to maintain that for the years afterwards. What was your deep why for wanting to shed all of this the excess material so you could spend more time on the things that you valued?
So you're right. There, you know, there's probably two factors to it. There was the why at the beginning, the beginning motivation. And then there was the process or the ritual of going through it, and they were very different motivations. So my why at the very beginning was, gosh, I am tired of taking care of all of my stuff when I would much prefer to be spending time with my kids, spending time with my family, pursuing personal development, pursuing soul growth. And so that was the motivation at the beginning. And then that sparked it. That was all I needed to get started. But after that initial motivation, which I think is important. And I do a 12-week course online helping people declutter their homes. And that's what we always do the first week is we declare, okay, why do we want to do this? What's the life that we want to live rather than chasing material possessions? But after that, then there is just the ongoing daily practice of it, or weekly practice, whatever it looks like. And what I found most helpful then is that I was journaling. I had started the blog, Becoming Minimalist, very early on, like 2 days after, 2 days after this conversation with my neighbor, I started the blog just to become an online journal of what I was doing and what I was keeping and what I was learning. And I found it very motivating. Because it helped me notice things and become intentional and write about it. It motivated me to get rid of stuff because I was kind of going public with what I was doing, and so I wanted to be able to report that things were going well. And so I'm a big fan of journaling because I think it forces intentionality, it forces thoughtfulness, it forces commitment in a lot of ways. And so that was probably the ongoing process that kept me going.
Nice. That external accountability. That was a good tool to use once that motivation wears off or the willpower is not there, to have something back in that, some routines and some out, it sounded like probably pretty early on outside people rooting for you. And you probably wrote about this early on, but what were some possessions that were the most difficult for you to shed?
The most difficult thing for me to shed were the assumptions concerning how much I needed to own. And so I had a closet full of clothing, and I went through the closet and I got rid of, I don't know, a third of it pretty easily, stuff that I didn't like, I didn't wear, it was stained, it was worn out. Like, why am I holding on to this anyway? And got my closet down to, I don't know, probably a smidge over a half of what it was before. Meanwhile, Courtney Carver, who I referred to earlier, she started this experiment called Project 333, where you wear just 33 articles of clothing for 3 months. It counts shoes and jewelry and coats and everything. It doesn't count underwear or workout clothes, but everything else. You have 3 months. You pick 33 items to wear for 3 months. And I looked at my closet. And I'm like, gosh, I could never do that. I mean, I probably got 60 things hanging in there already. I couldn't possibly go down to 33. But I said, what's the harm in trying? And so on October 1st, years ago, I said, let's do it. And so I just went through my closet and I limited it down to 33 things that I really love. They all kind of matched together. And I went those 3 months wearing it. And I found that I loved that number. Like, owning 33 articles of clothing was far more beneficial to my life than owning 50 or 60. Not only did I not need 50 or 60 things, my life was better with half that amount in my closet. And so it was those assumptions. How many TVs do I need to have in my house? How many plates and dishes, how many towels, right? How much square footage do I need in my home? Challenging those assumptions was a thing that took the longest, but was also the most beneficial. Maya Angelou once said, we need so much less than we think we need. And I think that when we realize that, our lives are really opened up to pursue other things.
I'm glad you mentioned experiments. My friend Kendra Wright, who's been on the podcast a couple times talking about journaling and how she plans her week with a calendar, is doing an experiment right now. She's trying to see what it feels like to live without her car for 30 days. And we live in Austin, Texas, so we've got Uber. We're walking distance from a lot of different places. Bike's always a possibility. So she's doing this experiment to see if, well, hey, is a car something that I really need? Is this, many people assume living in the United States that you need a car, but maybe that's not true. Are there any other experiments that might help people get into minimalism or possibly just an experiment with a that you've heard of that has worked for people?
Man, you can experiment with almost everything. And there's even a whole chapter in the book on the value of experimenting. Patrick Roan uses this illustration of a tightrope walker and finding what is enough stuff for us. He says often like a tightrope walker, where a tightrope walker is constantly leaning between the right and the left side, trying to keep his balance. And finding balance in the amount of things that we own is very similar. He says we only find the right amount when we waver between too much and too little. The problem is that no one ever lives with too little. We all have lived our entire life with too much. And so we think we're in balance, but we're leaning way over to the right. And we never find that sweet spot until we, could I give up my car for 30 days? Maybe you find out you can't. Maybe you find out you can, but you don't know until you test it. One of the very early ones that we did was televisions. We had 4 TVs in our home when we began the process, and we just said, let's just try one. And so we took 3, and we didn't, you know, sell them or throw them away. We just put them in the basement and said, let's just try one television for a month. And we found out that we loved it, that it kept us together as a family a little bit more. And, so we still to this day just have one television. So I think there's a lot of different things. I took all the apps off my phone and use it just as a dumb phone for 40 days to see what that would do. Gave up meat for several weeks. And I think all those things helped to bring us back into balance.
I like it. That's good. With the TV, I think that could have other productivity benefits too. And going back to that possessions question, what are some other reasons why people think that that giving rid of things are going to be more difficult than they actually are? I know I had trouble getting rid of some t-shirts because I had some sentimental values to it, because I feel like that giving things up seems like it might be a sticking point for people. So I wanted to talk just a little bit more about that.
Well, I think that what you find is you find 2 factors that lead to this over accumulation of possessions that most of the Western world lives under. You certainly find society, right? We see 5,000 advertisements every single day, and they all tell us that we're not as happy as we could be until we buy whatever they're selling. Basically, every advertisement comes down to that message. You'll be happier if you buy whatever we're selling. And so we hear that so many times, we start to believe it. But I don't think some people blame entirely culture and society, and I don't. I think that deep down, we all have some negative tendencies in our heart. We're maybe a little bit jealous. We're maybe a little bit selfish or greedy. We want to impress other people. We want to be noticed. We're looking for certain security or happiness in our possessions. We're tying meaning to certain physical possessions that the meaning isn't in the possessions, right? The memory or the meaning is in our hearts and in our minds. And so I think that there's a kind of an outward force, but it's just feeding into some internal desires that once you start removing things and you're forced to wrestle with, okay, why do I have a hard time parting with this t-shirt? Like, what is it about this t-shirt that's difficult for me to get rid of? And maybe you don't have to get rid of the t-shirt, but if you never ask those questions, I don't think you ever realize what it is that might be keeping you attached to it.
Nice. And I think that's the value of your book. I mean, you do give some strategies on how you can clean a room, but it's, like you said, just something every organizational blog post will tell you. But getting at the heart of those issues, that push of consumerism and the pull of greed or the need for security or acceptance, is that deeper layer that you'll get from reading your book. And I really appreciate the nuance and the stories that you threw in there. I almost feel like skipping this section because it's, you know, you are enough. You don't need any more things, but for consistency's sake, would you answer these 3 questions? A book, a tool, and a ritual. Is there any book that has helped you out recently, or it's just been something that's stuck with you for a long time that's helped you become more productive or efficient?
I read a book decades ago called Tyranny of the Urgent by Charles Hummel. The book was written in 1967. It's quite religious, so if that turns you off, people might not enjoy it. But Tyranny of the Urgent, Charles makes a guy ahead of his time. 50 years ago, he was talking about the balance between all the urgent things that are so loud and clamor for our attention, email and deadlines and other people, other people's needs, compared to the very important things in life, our health, solitude and time for thought, that the urgent clamor for our attention and the important are very quiet. And unless we intentionally pursue those things, we often get caught up in chasing the urgent things rather than the important. So it's a very, very helpful distinction that I've considered ever since.
I like that. Yeah. My recollection from that came from Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, where he talks about the Eisenhower matrix or the Covey quadrant, where it's just you want to spend that time in that important but not urgent, but it's very hard to get sucked into those other cubes of not important and urgent, like emails just screaming at you, hey, you need to get this back to me, or whatever it happens to be. So great message there, and we'll definitely put that in the show notes, a classic that we have not heard before. What about a tool or a resource that you might recommend to our listeners? It could be digital or physical, whatever you want it to be.
Melissa Camera Wilkins is a blogger, and she introduced me to the idea in a blog post of the 3-item to-do list, which I have used ever since and have loved it, where the start of every day, you start with just 3 items on your to-do list, and I write them down. And then those are the 3 projects that you accomplish during the day. And sometimes you get through them sooner, you have time for other things. But it's been very helpful to me because my to-do list tends to be never ending, and I could do about anything on given day. And I would reach the end of the day and I would feel unproductive because my list isn't any shorter than it was before. But ever since setting down and deciding, okay, what are the 3 most important things that I need to do today? And then when they are complete, I feel like I can be done at 5 o'clock and I can rest confident that I accomplished what I set out to accomplish that day.
I like that. It probably helps you prioritize and get more of those important things actually done instead of letting those urgent things slip onto your to-do list.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the 3 items, it would never be like write a book today. You know, it's begin this chapter of this book, or, you know, do the research for this one chapter. And then there's certainly time for, you know, the emails in between them and finding some of the other things to do that have to are always there.
I like it. What about a ritual or a habit that you do daily that brings a lot of value?
I am a huge clutter-free morning guy. I love at the end of the day, whether it's I work from home, so I make a point to clean the kitchen every evening, so that when I wake up in the morning, I'm not left with yesterday's mess. When I had an office job, I cleaned off my desk at the end of every evening so that the morning begin fresh and new, and I could choose whatever project I need to do that day. So when it comes to rituals, I'm just a guy that says tidy everything up the night before so that you can start brand new and fresh the following morning.
Wash your bowl. We at Asian Efficiency, we call that idea clear to neutral. And I'm a big fan of doing that in the physical world, but I noticed actually if I do it digitally, if I close all my applications, close down all the tabs that I might have up on Chrome, that I'm way less likely to get distracted in the morning when I open up my computer and I'm not remembering all of the things that I had up from the day before, and I'm able to just focus on that most important thing. You know, if you have a 3-item to-do list or whatever number that you pick, if you could focus right on that versus being distracted by that whatever article you're reading the night before. So great. I really enjoy that. All right, before you go, is there any place that you'd like to direct our listeners, or maybe any piece of parting guidance that you would like the Productivity Show or the Asian Efficiency audience to hear?
I'm at becomingminimalist.com, and it is a website dedicated to the premise that there is more joy to be found in owning less than you can ever find pursuing more. If that's a message that resonates with you as it does with so many other people, And we offer inspiration and practical help every single week.
Awesome, Joshua. Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing that message, and look forward to connecting with you sometime soon.
Yes, I look forward to it as well.
Mark Twain was quoted as saying, "The two most important days of your life are the day that you were born and the day that you figure out why." Joshua added to that. He says, "The day you were born, the day you figure out why, and the day you remove all of the barriers to getting what you want. They're three most important days." Minimalism is the intentional promotion of things that we most value and the removal of anything that distracts us from them. My hope is that you can pull one or two takeaways from this episode to remove a few of those distractions. If you want a little bit more help, episode 5 with Darren Boss is another great episode on organization and decluttering both your digital and physical environments. Also, if you order Joshua's book, which we'll link to in the show notes, and send him the receipt, he is giving away his 12-week online course with videos, interviews, webinars, articles, weekly challenges, accountability, and community. $89 value that he normally sells completely for free. So if this year you want to make it your last spring cleaning, the last time you have that same story Joshua has of needing to take everything out of the garage and hose it down instead of maybe spending more time on the things that are important to you, then go to the show notes and we will show you the links on how to do that. So until next week, please plan, do, review, organize, prioritize, eliminate the unimportant, delegate and automate what you can, focus on your most important task, take care of yourself, find momentum, move towards your ideal, achieve anything, not everything, enjoy this life, do more, and be better. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you next Productive Monday.